Hi, today is January 27, 2013, and this is the Mobile Views podcast number 61. I'm here with my good friends Jay Stone and Emil Reyes, and today we're going to be talking about the Apple price stock price drop over the last couple of almost 2 months now. Apple, as of last week, Friday, it was at $439.88, and that is down from a peak of, I think it was like $702 or something like that, back in September. And it is also, I think, a 52-week low, because a year ago it was at $447.28. So we're not stock experts at any I don't think any three of us would claim to be experts at this stuff, but we follow Apple, so we're, you know, we're interested in its financial, you know, stability and all that. Not that it's not stable, but, you know, it's a very healthy company as yet, but we're wondering about it, right, guys?
Yeah.
So, you know, what's the deal, right? This started in, I think, early December. We started to see the price starting to drop, that's not true. I'm kind of looking at it now. The price started to drop, right, you know, of course, from its high back in mid-September. It took a huge plummet, plummeted to a low of around mid-November, and climbed back up a bit in late November, right around Thanksgiving. U.S. Thanksgiving anyway, and then started to plummet from 582, like I said, in late November, all the way down to 439.88 as of last week, Friday. So it's been on a downhill roller coaster since then, and there's been a lot of speculation. So we figure, why the heck shouldn't we speculate too? So what do you guys think? What's going on with Apple? Why is it doing this, even though it's still a reasonably successful company? I mean, you know, looking at it, their revenues look pretty healthy. The revenues per employee are higher than anybody else. I think it's $2.26 million revenue per employee. Last net income reported is $41.7 billion. Earnings per share is $44.56. Compare that to Microsoft at $1.84, by the way. And it has a pretty reasonable P/E. I mean, very reasonable, 9.871. Some would even call that undervalued. Well, price to earnings would be not undervalued, but, a little bit too low, perhaps. So what do you guys think?
I don't know. I'm confused. It doesn't make any sense. Yeah, but then I'm not a stock person. I don't own any stocks. I only own mutual funds.
Uh-huh.
I've never really understood how stocks go up and down. I just look at what people do. And when I look at, I mean, they had record revenue, record sales, and it still went down, which tells me, I don't know, maybe investors are stupid. I mean, that's the only thing I could conclude. You'd want to invest in a company that's making stuff and making money. I mean, they're making money. I don't understand.
Well, I think, you know, with the economy still recovering, and also other devices, other Android devices have been seriously propagated, sold, and, you know, been down. The price has been, the race to the bottom is finally there. I talked to a lot of people who are telling me that they would love an Apple device, but right now they can afford, a Google device or a Android tablet. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, are going that way, just because, you know, now there's enough out there. And even though, you know, Apple stuff is still up there, I think we're really just feeling the effects of everything kind of evening out a bit.
All right, so it's kind of like high-end cars, where everybody would like to have one, but if you can't afford one, you're going to buy what you can afford.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, if you listen to Tim Cook's, when he had the earnings
right
call last week, he basically, you know, poo-pooed the cheap iPhone, right?
Right.
We're going to do what we do, you know? We're not changing our tactics, really. Which is, I don't know, to me is fine. I guess I always look at it like this, right? I admit, I've liked Max for a long time, so maybe I'm a little biased, but it didn't, to me, I mean, if you look at them from, what, 15 years ago? Whenever Jobs came back?
It would be not quite 20, but pretty, yeah, I think it was around 1997, so it was a while back.
15, 16 years ago?
Yeah.
You know, when they only had 3 months towards bankruptcy.
Right.
And then now, so, I don't know. For me, it doesn't, I can't afford their stock, so I couldn't buy a share. I could buy, probably buy one. I don't have that much money. I could probably buy one. But, you know, like people like, you know, our family, we didn't get an iPhone for a long time. All we had was an iPad.
Right.
And we didn't get it until the iPhone 4 became free. And that's when we decided to move everyone to an iPhone. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't free, I wouldn't buy it. But I admit I'm kind of cheap, so I don't like to pay for a phone when there's a free one out there.
And you know, I have a couple friends who have told me that, you know, really they're going for the cheapest deals and they can, and that's not just the phone. I mean, for example, Mobi here locally, I have two friends who've gone there just because they have lower costs. And guess what? There's no iPhone there. So, I mean, in the continual hunt for lower costs, I mean, you head away from Apple. Everyone I know is looking for every single way to pinch a penny nowadays.
Yeah, and, you know, there are some really, you know, two or three years ago when, for example, when the iPad first came out and the iPhone was still relatively new, there really was nothing that compared favorably to an iPhone or the then new iPad, which was introduced in April of 2010. Yep. Less than, what is that, 4 years ago now? It's 11, 12, 13. Yeah, so less than 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. But today, you know, the Nexus 7 looks pretty good. The Galaxy Note 10.1 looks pretty good. There are a bunch of nice Android phones, a lot of them from Samsung. And Samsung has become the new 800-pound gorilla, it seems.
Yeah, I read something just the other day. They now, Apple used to be the biggest chip buyer in the world, and now Samsung is the biggest chip buyer. They buy more chips than anyone else now.
Right, and don't forget, I think doesn't Apple buy its LCD displays from Samsung or something like that?
Some of them. They've been, there's word that they've been trying to find other people.
Yeah.
Like going to Sharp or LG. I think Sharp. I don't know about any others. So they've been, over the last several years, been trying to find other suppliers who can do what they want.
Yeah, and the...
They don't make it. They find a third party to actually make it for them.
Right. And there are other pretty good Android, you know, phone and tablet makers too. The Asus, Asus made the Galaxy, not the Galaxy Tab, but the Google Nexus 7, and it did really well. It's doing really well. You know, they've increased the memory capacities on it, so it's pretty competitive with the iPad now in terms of features. Although it still doesn't have a rear-facing camera. But its price, you know, starting at, what is it, $200 or whatever, it's really, you know, it's half the price of a new iPad, and it's still a lot cheaper than the iPad Mini, which starts at, I think, $329 or so.
$329.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's LG, which is, you know, actually it's an embarrassment. LG can't keep up with the demand for the Nexus 4. You haven't been – well, I've been checking the Nexus 4 for, you know, nearly 2 months now, and it's never available. It's never available for purchase.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. But, you know, LG sued Samsung.
Is that right? For what?
Shoot, I read it. LG sued recently within the last quarter. Sued Samsung, which I thought was funny.
Well, everybody's suing everybody these days, it seems.
LG sued Samsung over OLED display patents.
Oh, okay.
And then Samsung sued LG Display over the same thing.
Okay. Which is kind of independent of the whole Android thing, except, of course, that they both use displays, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, they, you know, they both have very popular products. Samsung's you can get easily. LG's is nearly impossible to buy. And, of course, LG is blaming Apple for not telling them, you know, an accurate estimate of how many units they wanted. But I wonder why LG simply can't ramp up production. You know,
The funny thing I thought from Tim Cook's conference call was that they still can't make enough iPads and iPhones.
Yeah, that is interesting. But, you know, on the converse side, they sold fewer Macs in the last quarter than they did the year previous, 4.1 million versus 5.2 million the previous the quarter a year ago.
But did you see his response to that?
What's that?
Tim Cook's response. They asked them about that on the conference call. And so he said they don't fear cannibalization.
This is true.
If they don't do it, someone else will. So we just do it.
Yeah. And that's a good response, I suppose. I mean, if it is a post-PC world, certainly the iPad is the post-PC. And Apple has in the past shown the willingness to cannibalize their own products. When I know the example I always use is when they dropped the iPod Mini, which was the most popular selling iPod at the time, and introduced iPod Nano in its place. So, you know, they're not afraid to do that. And that might be an example of it. And also, they appear to be abandoning the Mac Pro Tower format. They haven't refreshed that in ages.
Yeah, but you know what? I read another thing about why their stock price tanked, and who wrote it, but the article I read was referring to the expectation that their earnings are going to be lower or something. I don't know if I'm using the right term. But essentially, the way I interpret it, they're going to be making less money in the new quarter for various reasons.
Okay. Yeah, I think I kind of vaguely remember that too. And some of it, I think, was a supply chain thing you mentioned where they literally can't make enough of it. Some of it was, I think, because they're selling a lot of stuff for much lower prices than they used to. For example, the iPhone 4 example you gave where your family went to all iPhone 4s because they're free. Yeah. So, I mean, Apple makes money off of it by, you know, getting kind of subsidies from, you know, monthly payments from your phone company. But, you know, they don't make that one hit, you know, $200, $300 that they normally would have. So, you know, that must affect it, you know, when you multiply that by millions of units.
And then, of course, like Emil, you're saying, the economy.
Yeah.
I mean, does it look, I'm sure it looks bad in other countries.
Oh, yeah, I mean.
I guess it could, but I don't think so. Right, I mean, the whole world's pretty off.
Right,
pretty messed up right now, honestly.
And you know, going back to the Apple stock price drop, though, you know, there's been a surprising amount of turmoil at Apple at the executive level since Steve Jobs died in 2011. You know, they brought in that new Apple Store exec who came from, where do you come from, JCPenney's or someplace like that? No.
He went to JCPenney.
Yeah, the guy who created Apple Store went to JCPenney's, and I forget where the new guy came from, but he was the guy that started laying off people at the Apple stores and all kinds of questionable activities that got him removed from his position. And then, of course, Scott Forstall left, fired, we really don't know. But he's no longer there, and that was kind of surprising, at least to me. You know, and I don't know the personalities of all these folks, but you know, that was a name I recognized of the executives at the company. So that was a little bit surprising.
I guess it was, but when you read the trades about how he was at the company, if you believe it, it doesn't seem surprising because apparently he wasn't very cooperative with the other executives, like him and Johnny Ive, he didn't get along with any of the other executives.
Except Steve Jobs.
Yeah. He was like a favorite of Steve Jobs, right?
Right.
And then, and I think the whole, you know, I mean, it's sad to say, but the whole Apple Maps really left a lot of people with a bad taste. For me, it didn't matter because I didn't have Maps on my iPad, so I never got to really experience how bad or good or mediocre it really was. But I mean, apparently Scott Forstall wouldn't apologize, and so Tim Cook did, and he got fired.
Yeah, and it was funny because it was, I think, a week after Steve Sinofsky left Microsoft under similar circumstances.
It's the guy who showed the Surface, right?
Right. Well, Steve Sinofsky did a lot of stuff. He was the guy who created kept the Microsoft Office engine running for many years. It was, you know, Microsoft Office is one of the cash cows for Microsoft. And then he became the head of the Windows group, which, you know, launched Windows, Windows 7, and then Windows 8, and Windows RT, you know, the Surface that he was demonstrating. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation about why he was apparently canned or, you know, asked to leave, or however you want to put it. But he was also apparently a prickly person, or is a prickly personality, at least amongst the I've never met him, so I've never met any of these guys. But if you believe what, like you said, if you believe what you read, you know, he left under similar circumstances. And his downfall may have been the Surface RT, which is, you know, apparently is not done well at all.
Really?
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Or Windows 8 in general. I mean, Windows 8 has not sold well relative to what people were expecting it to do. You know, Microsoft didn't get a price bump or a revenue bump from it the way they have in past releases of Windows. So, you know, it's been kind of disappointing all around. And now there's a finger-pointing game going on where Microsoft is saying Windows 8 didn't launch well because the hardware manufacturers had uninspiring, non-touch devices, and as you guys know, Windows 8 really, really needs a touch device to shine. So, yeah, lots of blame being passed around in those two companies. Microsoft stock, of course, has been stagnant for well over a decade, so nobody's really noticed it. but Apple dropping from $700 and some odd down to, you know, $439. I mean, that is one big drop.
Yeah, but do you think it's just a natural correction? I
mean, boy,
$700 was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, you know, I'm certainly no expert at this, so I don't know if it's a correction or what, but I wonder if it's, you know, if it's kind of a whole bunch of things that have not gone all that well at Apple recently, like the Apple Maps fiasco you mentioned, and I think the surprisingly short update cycle, at least for Apple, where people, I think, were stunned, for example, when the iPad 4 was announced just 6 months after the iPad 3, or the new iPad, as it was officially called. The non-Retina iPad Mini, which, quite frankly, doesn't bother me. I still like my iPad Mini. But, you know, there are a lot of things that people question. And then there's some really bad apps. The podcast app, for example, from Apple is just horrible.
Yeah, I haven't even used it.
Well, you know, I'll put it on this side, because I've been fighting with this for a few years now. The server side is basically gone.
Yes, that's right.
It's terrible. The server app, they've gone from having a full-fledged server to a server app. Granted, cost-wise, it's affordable, but as far as support development, it's terrible.
Yeah. So Jay, what Emil is saying is they Apple used to have a product called the XServe, which is a rack-mounted server.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and that's gone, right, Emil? They don't make that anymore.
Yeah, it's completely gone. The only thing you can do for server now is you just download a server app, and then you can do it. You can do some of the server stuff, but try to find information on that, education on that. You know, they had their premier service at the Apple stores that at first they advertised that it'll help with server. As far as learning, but then it's not there.
Yeah, and in fact, the only server hardware you can buy now, I mean, that's labeled as a server, is the Mac Mini, which is kind of funny.
Oh, the little box.
Yeah.
So technically, it's like a home server, and they say you can do a lot of stuff with it, but if you read reviews on it and you look around for help and reviews on it, it's very mediocre.
Well, you know, but one of the things I think some of us have observed is Apple has said – well, I'm not said, but Apple seems to be indicating by its actions that the enterprise market is not where it wants to be. You know, they got rid of the XServe. They haven't refreshed the Mac Pro Tower in well over a year, I think.
Yeah.
They changed – what is their video software, which I don't use, obviously –
Final Cut Pro.
Yeah. They kind of dummified it so that the new version is great for, you know, amateurs like me. I don't use it, but I assume people like me who are, you know, just kind of playing around with stuff. But apparently the pros are, you know, just can't use it, and they're going back to some of the software that they used to use before.
Mm-hmm. That's the same thing I've been hearing.
So it really looks like Apple's saying, hey, you know what? We're not an enterprise company. And so servers, server hardware, server software, even not quite enterprise, but high-end, you know, video kind of stuff, that's not where we're at anymore. We're really a consumer company.
Yeah, and they've been focusing on the cloud.
Yeah, well, what do you mean by that? Because their cloud strategy has always left me puzzled.
Well, you know, looking at the intent of it, because that's the one thing I saw in server when I was really looking at the server heavy,
yeah.
Is that, you know, they were originally touting that everything that the iCloud is now, you were supposed to be for business users, you easily set that up using the Apple server software. And that, you know, in theory, that was great. In execution, it was horrible.
Yeah, you know, Apple has never gotten social or the cloud quite right, from what I can tell. You know, I really don't like using iCloud, and in fact, I sometimes, you know, like I had to hard reset my iPad just yesterday, because of some firmware problems. And I forgot iCloud was on and stuff was, or iCloud was off. I can't remember. And I remember I had to go in and turn stuff off, turn stuff on. And it's just a mess.
And, you know, I like it for what I'm using it for. I'm using it for the very simplest purposes. As a secure guy with a security background, it's a nightmare enterprise wise. Absolutely, you know, something to be avoided.
Yeah. What kind of security issues do you see in it?
Well, I mean, it's efficiency that it updates. You know, it's constantly updating, and a lot of the syncing behind the scenes. You know, let's just say also the base Apple core is right now is not the most secure of the operating systems out there. Okay, but you know, so combine that with things that lull users into a false sense of security.
Right.
And then if I put one thing, it propagates it on every single device that possible. So, and also, you know, that type of thing, again, convenience is wonderful, but if right now with the difficulty of the use of the server software, it's too easy for any admin to make a mistake that could ruin somebody really quickly.
Hmm.
I think you're right, though, you guys. I mean, I think it's a consumer company. And it's like they made a conscious choice over so many years that's the direction to go, and they just, this is it.
Right. And that's not a bad thing to do, but I guess it's left a bad taste in some people's mouths. Certainly not, you know, I don't think it's enough to justify this price drop we saw. I mean, it certainly was never a big part of their strategy.
Well, I know other people are also saying they're afraid that they can't come up with something new anymore.
Well, you know, I think I was listening to, it might have been MacBreak Weekly or something like that. But although it's hard to believe, the iOS platform is now the oldest of the major smartphone platforms.
Yeah.
You know, it's older than Android. It's older than Windows Phone. It's older than...
Symbian?
No, well, Symbian's dead, right?
Completely dead.
Right. Nokia has already said that the PureView, what is 808 or whatever it's called, was the last Symbian device they'll make.
Yeah, they went well into Windows.
Yeah. So, yeah, Symbian's gone, so that's not counting. BlackBerry's getting a refresh sometime this year, the BlackBerry 10. So, you know, iOS, although they've updated it every year, it still looks more or less the same as it did when it launched in 2007.
I wonder what Johnny Ive is going to do with it.
What's that?
Johnny Ive? Because he took over after they fired Forstall.
Right, he's in charge of all user experience kinds of stuff.
Yeah. I wonder what they're going to do with the next version.
I don't know. And it's one of those things. Now, they're kind of in the same boat that Microsoft's been in on a desktop. You know, when you have that many devices out there, they have probably well over 100 million devices running iOS. It is hard to change because now you've got to change, you know, hundreds or at least tens of millions of people. They have to learn something new. It's kind of like Windows 8 problem right now. Windows 8 is so different from every other version of Windows that preceded it that I think it's you know, the resistance it's seeing You know, Microsoft can blame the hardware partners all they want, but Windows 8 is so different. People look at it and go, wow, I'm not sure I want to deal with that. In fact, one analyst, gosh, I can't remember where, I think might work for the Nielsen group, not the Nielsen marketing people, but you know, the Nielsen UI guys, says that Windows 8 creates a cognitive burden on its users.
What does that mean?
Well, it means that when you, you know, when you use an interface of any kind, there's a lot of preconceived notions of what you expect something to do, especially if it's something that should be similar to something used before. So, for example, if you go up to a door and you turn the doorknob and it requires you to turn it exactly the opposite of what you expect, it creates a cognitive burden on you because now you have to learn something new with something that looks very similar to what you're already familiar with, right? Or if you have a switch that works backwards from what you expect it to do, or if you can't figure out if a door needs to be pushed or pulled, you know, you have to think about it too much. And Windows 8 is a lot like that. I know as someone who's, you know, been using it since its early release stages, you know, when it was a developer release, it was really difficult to get comfortable with. And I'm not sure, I think I'm reasonably comfortable with it now, but certain things still drive me kind of bonky.
So you had it on a desktop?
I was running it actually on a touch display netbook. So I had a touch display with it all the time. But of course, even when I had the touch display, it was on a netbook, right? So I would try to use it with just a mouse to see what that was like, and that was just an awful experience.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, once you know what to do, it becomes not as terrible. But as a person coming in cold to it, and Microsoft provided no instructions, and even when you started now, that I haven't tried it Windows 8 on a new machine. But I know even booting up the Surface RT, they provide no tutorial on what to do. Wow. So you have to either know or accidentally find out or learn from somebody else about, you know, swiping to the side to get to the charms, swiping up to get, you know, various options, swiping from left to right to get the two-panel mode and how to get the timing right so it doesn't disappear. All of these things you have to kind of accidentally discover, or if you're lucky, have somebody who, you know, has already gone through this pain to explain how this works to you. And it is not intuitive at all, in my opinion.
Sometimes it seems like my Mac.
What's that?
So it almost seems like my Mac.
Yeah, you know, and for people who move from, say, Windows to a Mac, OS X is certainly not intuitive in some things, but it does have a menu at the top, which, you know, most of us has come to expect. And at least with, I guess, I can't remember when it was introduced now. Was it Leopard? You know, with the spotlight search?
Yeah.
That made it much more discoverable, in my opinion. But I know people who go from Windows to Mac, and it's just a mystery to them.
Yeah, a lot of things, well, because I have Windows at work and Mac at home, and then I have my iOS stuff.
Right.
So there's some things I just wish the Mac had, to be honest. But it doesn't have it because I'm used to the other one, and then it's like, why wouldn't you do this? I mean, it just makes more sense.
Yeah, yeah.
In some things. You want to print, right?
Yeah.
So I do Command-P, okay? And I want to pick a range.
Uh-huh.
And then if you're in preview, it's not like the standard print dialog box you see in most Mac programs. It looks different. And then you have to click this down arrow and click between all or single or range. And you click that, you click what you want, and then you have to figure out what the range is. But then I don't know what page I'm supposed to be on because I gotta look for the page. It's not that easy to use. I had to do that for my daughter, that's why. She needed to... Oh, my daughter? I think it was my daughter. She needed help printing something out at home. And she only needed certain pages from this document. And I found it really cumbersome. I was like, why would you do it this way? It doesn't even look like the... It doesn't look like the regular... It's just in preview I see it.
Okay, so in this case, what the real problem is the lack of consistency in Apple's own preview mode compared to other Apple or even third-party print menus. Is that right?
Yeah, well, not preview mode. There's that app, It's called Preview.
Right.
It lets you read PDFs, right?
Right, right, right.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was just weird.
Well, that's what I meant, the Preview, Apple's Preview app. Yeah, compared to, yeah.
And you can't do Save As.
From Preview. Right, it's not like the Adobe PDF reader.
No, it's like you have to use Duplicate.
Ah.
It's weird. I mean, other people online have complained about it. And they used to have it, and then they changed it. I don't know when they changed it. They changed it sometime.
Well, you know, Apple's been doing things like that. I mean, even the last iTunes update, you know, the last version change. One of the things that really bothered me is that by default, the left sidebar is hidden.
Yeah.
Right? So you don't see any of the... I mean, it's not gone. It's just not visible unless you turn it on, which I did immediately. But I want... What's that?
I don't even know how to turn it on. That's the thing. But, you know, that's the one thing I tell my family at home. I like the Mac operating system and everything. Even on my iOS devices, I like it. But it doesn't tell me how to... A lot of times, I don't know how to do certain things. And then... But then when my kids do it, I went, it's to make a lot of sense. Most of the time. Just like, oh, Dad, just drag it. And I went, it can't be that easy. And then so my daughter is doing something, and it's one of the apps on the Mac, and goes, yeah, just drag it. This is how you do it. I went, does that always work? She said, most of the time.
Yeah. And I do have to give Apple that. I mean, they do have some inconsistencies, but... Often it's sort of like the most obvious thing you can think of is the way you can do it. And also generally there's only one way to do things. So, you know, so it's not like there's five different ways to do things and you got to figure out which one works best for you. Before I forget, for those wondering, so in the OS X version of iTunes, if you fire up iTunes and you go to the view option, and the view menu option, there is a show sidebar that you can use to show the sidebar, so you can see the sidebar like you always have, which to me makes a lot of sense. So I turned that thing on immediately after I spent about a minute puzzled looking over the new interface, saying, "I want that folder list."
Yeah, thank you. I just did it.
Yep, so I just verified it by looking at iTunes myself. But yeah, anyway, so it is there. But they've been making a lot of little changes like that. And, you know, and though some of us may have forgotten, I think it was also on iTunes. Let me see if they restored it. You know, for a while, they restored it, but the close, minimize, expand buttons on the right-hand side, I think they were vertical for a while. Or something really different, something I didn't like, I remember. I can't remember what it was, but it's back to being horizontal now.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know what that is.
Yeah. It's the red, yellow, and green buttons in the top left of all windows.
Yeah.
I think it was vertical for a while, which was a relatively small change, but it really bothered me. Okay, so Apple, well, basically we don't know. We're not experts. We don't claim to be experts. We're just kind of puzzling over this like everybody else, why it's dropped to, you know, from $700 and some odd to down to $439 with, and in fact, after hours, it was still only up like a buck. So it's going to open tomorrow morning, Monday morning at about $441, which is kind of scary. One thing I will say, though, is I think, you know, Samsung has really taken over not just the sales, but, you know, they've taken over sales by being, I don't know if you want to use the word innovative, but certainly they've tried different things, like, you know, the big giant screens on the Note and Note 2, the giant 5-inch screens.
But just on people's phones. I mean, when I was in the supermarket and I saw this very small woman. She was short, you know. And she had the largest phone I've ever seen. It was just huge. I don't know if it was Samsung, but it was big. And I'm like, and I was listening to a podcast, and these guys were saying, what's up with this? Why are we going back to having these huge bricks? You know, remember how cell phones were?
Yeah, yeah.
They were huge. And then they got really small. And then now these screens are getting bigger and bigger. And one thing the guy said, is on this podcast, I don't remember which one it was, is that it might be better in China to have a slightly larger screen because of the characters.
Nice. That makes some sense.
You need to read. I don't know.
Yeah.
But and I just thought it was silly. This person, she's very small. My wife's like 5 feet, and she's shorter than that. But she had this, I wouldn't hold a phone that big. And I'm like 5'9". I mean, it was like bigger than my hand.
I'll tell you though, they are popular. I am surprised by the number of people I see with what I assume are you know, Samsung Notes or Note 2 devices with the big 5-inch screens. And you're right, they're not like big, huge basketball player type guys that, you know, who's where the Samsung Note would look like a normal size phone in their, you know, their big hands. These are like regular size or even small people with giant phones. But you know, having said that, big screens are easier to read. I mean, that's the first thing I noticed when I got my iPad, is that, wow, this is great. You know, now I have a lot of screen real estate to look at compared to my iPhone or iPod Touch back then. And two, you know, as the population ages, maybe a bigger screen is just not, you know, a little bit easier to read and a lot easier to touch, you know, with the touch element separated a little bit more or something. So maybe it's an aging population thing. And certainly, you know, fads. You can never discount faddishness. You know, we had those, remember when everybody had those little tiny phones and the goal was to make the smallest phone possible that, you know, you wouldn't accidentally swallow while talking on it?
Yeah.
You know, those days are gone, right? And we're kind of the opposite way. And in fact, I know that if you look at, you know, some South Korean TV shows or movies, you'll notice that unlike the US where we don't have tablets that are actually phones, in South Korea they're like, I think it was like I saw a tab 207 that looked like the person was using it as a phone, you know, with a Bluetooth headset.
Yeah, you know, you remember how at work, at our former workplace, when you got your iPad?
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretending like it was a phone.
I remember doing that.
Right. And it was like, you know, how prescient that actually was, right? Never knew. And now people, you know, now that was a regular size iPad, so it was pretty big. But, you know, some of those things are really big.
Yeah.
And people are, yeah, they're putting this huge thing up to their head, like a phone.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, and I'm in the supermarket or walking around or just even like the guy who sold us our phones at Verizon, set us all up. He's like 6-something. He's a huge guy. His hands are massive. So when he showed us his phone, I'm like, wow, that looks appropriately proportional to his hand.
Because he's a big guy. God. Yeah.
But then I see, I mean, me, I wouldn't get this. It's just too big for me. You know, as a phone, maybe a tablet. But it just seems silly that I would want to have that with me and then hold it up to my ear.
Well,
there's a lot of people. And then they put it in their back pocket. You know? Like you would any other phone. It sticks out of that. You know how people put it in their back pocket? It sticks out of their back pocket. It's like halfway. Or, you know, they have cargo pants.
Right, right.
I have cargo shorts, right? And they put it in those pockets on the side.
Right.
It barely can fit in the pocket. I'm like looking at it and I went, okay, whatever. It's your phone. It just seems weird that they're getting huge. What I read one article, they call them manwich size phones.
Manwich. I like it. But you know, the thing is, whatever, you know, we think of it, these things seem to be selling and Apple doesn't have one.
Yeah. But you know, there's a lot of things Apple doesn't have.
Yeah.
And it's like, to me, that's what the choice they made.
Right.
You know, they only make, like, I was talking to someone, they only make a phone. They make basically one phone. They don't make any models of phones. You got an iPhone. I mean, you can argue iPhone 4 or 4S, right?
Right.
And then a 5. But it's essentially the same phone, just one slightly stretched.
That's right. That's actually true. Very true.
They don't make all these different versions to appeal to all the different likes or dislikes of different people, right?
Right. And, you know, it goes back to the question, it reminds me, I should say, of, you know, when Steve Jobs returned to Apple in 96 or 97, one of the things he that drove him batty, apparently, according to his biography, is that Apple had like a bazillion different SKUs of Macs. And he said, you know what, we're going to have, I don't know, like 2 Macs or something like that, right? And we're going to simplify the choices the customer has to avoid confusion. And they've done that, right? I mean, Apple, when you go into a store, really, there are very few products that Apple sells. There's, you know, a couple of Macs, a couple of MacBook notebooks, and like you said, basically two iPhones, one slightly stretched, and now two different iPad sizes. But it's not a lot of choices. And that's worked really well for a long time. But, you know, you have to wonder that if Android's, you know, almost unbelievably confusing number of choices is actually starting to, you know, play against Apple now with their sort of my way or the highway design choices.
Yeah, you're right. It might. It might be. Maybe before people had these devices, right? Before the iPhone existed, before the iPad existed, right? People didn't know what they wanted. You know, like what Steve Jobs would say, right? You should. He didn't believe in market studies because people don't know what they want until
right.
they make it.
Right.
So he did, right? Maybe now because of all people are familiar with all this stuff. Now they're choosing certain things because that's what they want.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because really before the iPhone, smartphones were not selling well. It was a very much of a niche market. You know, I had one because, well, that's what I wrote about. That's what I enjoyed, you know, playing with and all that sort of thing. But the vast majority of people I knew had feature phones. And they were perfectly happy with them until the iPhone came along and sort of changed the perception of what people thought they wanted to do with the phone. Up until then, they basically wanted to talk on it and send some text messages maybe. But now everybody wants to play games and, you know, take pictures, which was kind of unusual back then. You know, in 2007, there were lots of camera phones, but most of them were terrible in terms of picture quality. And now I think a lot of people are perfectly happy with the photos they take with their phones, saying, this is great. I'm going to keep this forever. I'm going to keep this photo forever.
Yeah, it's not as good as my camera, but it's good enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, for some people, their cameras are now so old because they haven't bought one in so long because their iPhone 5, for example, takes better photos than their, you know, 3-megapixel camera or whatever they have. With the exception of optical zoom, which the iPhone, no phone still has right now. But, okay, so, well, folks, I don't know if we have an answer, but there are a couple interesting things. Of, you know, the biggest thing about Apple is without Steve Jobs, are they lost? You know, a lot of people saying Apple's doomed and all that kind of stuff. I should note, I'm taking a quick look at what Apple is, and even after their massive losses in the past 2 months or so, hey, did I just lose my mouse? No, I didn't. There, I did. They are still worth $413 billion. To give you some comparison, Microsoft is $235 billion and Google is $247 billion. So they are still not quite twice as big as Microsoft and Google, but they're a lot bigger in terms of market cap, at least, than Microsoft and Google. This might interest you, but maybe specifically they're a hardware manufacturing company, but they have 72,800 employees. Google has 53,546 employees, and Microsoft has 94,000 employees. So they're kind of in the middle there. But here's the remarkable thing that, you know, makes you wonder why people think Apple is doomed. And, you know, let me give you a number and I'll give you a thought on that. So if you look at the revenue per employee number, it's pretty remarkable. So Microsoft, the revenue to employee is $775,900, very respectable. Google is $887,900 revenue per employee. Apple, $2.262 million revenue per employee. So, yeah. They make a ton of money per person. So in terms of efficiency of what they do, when you compare it to, you know, what they make per person, it is just enormous compared to some, you know, whatever you think of Microsoft and Google, they're very successful companies.
You know what that means? Firing someone is a big deal. I mean, that's a big deal. Someone leaves or someone gets fired? I mean, that's not a, you know, something you do in the heat of a moment. That's like, you better be right.
Well, you know, I think we read, you know, there's a whole bunch of stories about, for example, Apple Store employees a while back. And they apparently go through a lot of training. So, you know, Apple invests a lot of money in their people, you know, to get those kind of numbers, I think.
I mean, there's some engineering companies here, consulting companies, that don't even make $2 million a year for the whole company.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And that's good, yeah. Right? They're doing good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, That's insane.
Yeah, they make it per employee.
That's like the revenue for some of the, I mean, not the bigger engineering firms here, but, you know, decent sized engineering firms.
Right, boutique engineering firms, yeah.
Yeah, $2 million a year, you'd be sitting pretty. You'd be working long hours. You'd have maybe a staff of 10.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, Apple, what I was going to say is that, you know, what we do know is that for most tech companies, especially, or all companies in general, they wax and wane, right? We saw that with companies like WordStar and Lotus and VisiCore and Kodak and, you know, Sony and just tons and tons of companies, Nokia, RIM, companies that in their time, in their prime, were seemed unbeatable and unstoppable. And yet here they are today, either gone or going. And someday this is going to happen to Apple and Microsoft and Google, unless they reinvent themselves. And, you know, there are companies that reinvent themselves. I think IBM is the best example. IBM went from, you know, a mainframe hardware type company to essentially a services company, and they're doing quite well. They're not flashy. They don't make a lot of news. You know, people don't know much. But they're alive, right? They're an old company still around. And so, you know, these guys need to reinvent themselves at some point. And Apple reinvented themselves when Steve Jobs came back. Microsoft has yet to figure out how to do that. And Google might be too young to need to do that, but they're, you know, they're going to have to face this sooner or later themselves.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, as long as they keep on making stuff I want to buy.
And on that note, I think we'll end our speculation, since we obviously don't have an answer. But Apple, if you want to contract us for advice, feel free to do so. We're cheap.
That's true. Just give me an iPad every year.
There you go. We're cheap. Like I said, we're cheap. We'll give you our opinion. Any rate, this is Todd Ogasawara with my friends Jay Stone and Emil Reyes. Yeah, we don't have any answers, but we had a lot of fun speculating on why Apple stock has dropped so dramatically in the past 2 months. And well, we'll see what happens next. We keep hearing about a new iPad with 128 gigabytes of storage, and the next iPhone and all that coming up next. But that's to be seen. Okay, folks, talk to you later.